This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ipswich Town go into March on the back of 4 wins out of 4. Can they keep it going on their longest away trip of the season in the Paul Mariner Derby? This is the Blue Monday podcast. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, discussing the town up or down since 2015. I'm Rich Woodward and welcome to the pre-match show in partnership with our friends at the Greyhound Pub in Ipswich. We go live every Thursday at 8 p.m. to give you the lowdown on town's weekend opponents, and then we're available on podcast shortly afterwards. And as always, we're a regular pairing at the moment, aren't we? Seb Brown, happy leap day, whatever it is, Seb. And officially, this show shouldn't really exist in any other year, shouldn't it? But here we are, 29th of Feb.
Have we ever done a podcast on a leap year before? Do you know where you and me were 4 years ago today, the last time there was a leap year?
Oh, no, I don't. Tell me.
Blackpool away in that storm. Oh, Freddie Sears missed it one-on-one, and they went down and scored in the 93rd minute that or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Four years ago today. Time flies. So that was our last leap year. So hopefully this one will be a bit more fun.
Yeah, well, at least we're not playing the game actually on the day, are we? But yeah, we are here to talk about Plymouth. We see lots of Plymouth fans in the chat. Be respectful. There's a lot of, it's kind of a weird, it's becoming like a weird rivalry. We're going to kind of try and dampen things down a little bit if we can. I think, well, Seb might go a bit renegade, but I've got lots of love for Plymouth, plenty to like about Plymouth. And we're both making the trip, aren't we? Along with, I guess, 2,000 other town fans from different parts of the world. You north, me east. So it'll be exciting, won't it?
I think so, yeah. It's about over 5 hours for me. What is it from Suffolk? It must be longer. Six and a half, seven maybe?
Yeah. 70 miles an hour and no more. So, yeah.
Fair play to all of you going on the supporters coach, leaving at whatever, 5 a.m. or whatever.
Friday night, wasn't it? Yeah.
I doff my cap to you. I think Joe's going on the supporters coach, isn't he? Yeah, I think so. Fair play.
And it's like 6 a.m. and you're listening to this on the supporters coach. We salute you. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. And we hope that you have a nice, relaxing trip to Plymouth. We're going to talk about that in a second, but let's say hello to the folks in the chat. Ashley, roll on Plymouth, he says. I'm gutted not to be going. First game I've missed since Rotherham away. Ashley, it's a good record there. So, yeah, we'll be hopefully representing you and everyone else who can't make it across to the west of the country. Evening to Paul. Evening to Michael. G'day to you in Brisbane. Make sure we stop Plymouth shooting from outside the box. That's the pre-match show done, isn't it, Seb? That's your research sorted, isn't it?
Thanks for tuning in. See you all next week.
Yeah, exactly right. No, we've got more than that, surely. Chris, hello to our friends in New Zealand as well. He predicts another win coming up, hopefully. Colin is going as well by the look of it. Can't wait for the game. Jerry's here as well, evening from Wales. Just about stopped raining. I love how this is kind of like a weather report now, said the start of this podcast. It's been pissing it down. I'm gonna chuck that in there early doors, pissing it down all day here. How has it been where you are?
I'm getting heavy snow tomorrow, so yeah.
Oh, fun times.
Yeah, heavy snow at work. Not in Chester where I live, but I work about 45 minutes south. And yeah, heavy snow apparently from 6 in the morning till mid-afternoon, so that'll be fun.
There you go. There's your weather report, folks, if you're up in the northwest of the country. Jerry's feeling confident. Can't be there, but feeling we'll kick on despite the injuries. More about those later. Matt is here. Neil as well. Nice to keep this run and the pressure on the so-called big boys, he says. Rob is here as well. Eric. So yeah, and Lewis is here from Plymouth. Looking forward to this one. Eyes emojis. Yeah. Yeah, definitely give us your insights, Lewis. If we go wrong, do correct us. As always, be respectful as well. Matt is here. Mystic Seb. What minute is first goal on Saturday, please, Seb? Have you, spoiler alert, I don't think we've got that, or have we?
No, there's no time prediction this time. Yeah, it was weird. It's Birmingham again, wasn't it? So both Birmingham pre-match shows, I've managed to get something right. So I guess a broken clock is even right twice.
There you go. Evening to David in Helsinki. Best wishes to you as well. Nick is here. Kevin is here. Spoiling all of the research on the Telegram group in advance. Only joking, Kev. Great to have you with us as well. Feel free to supplement our knowledge as well, because you've got much more than we have. Elliot getting married this weekend. So the groomsman's main responsibility is remembering the rings. It's keeping him posted on the scores. Oh, would you want to know or not on that kind of day? What if?
Oh yeah, you want to know, obviously.
What if it's bad news? I'm not saying. We'll go to the predictions later on, but if it's good, let me know. If it's not, keep it to yourselves. Surely that would be the.
No, I don't know. I'd want to know either way, I think, because then, it might.
Well, go on then, finish.
But it might ruin the day if they've lost. You know, you have to put a brave face on during the speeches or something.
Oh, thanks for coming. Anyway, Brian's here. Mill Valley, California, not Hill Valley. Mill Valley. Yeah, great. But good representation across the country and beyond. Thank you. And 6.5. Ian's my lift for Saturday, and he's suggesting 6.5 hours. Send me an invoice for the petrol, Ian. I'm looking forward to seeing you. But yeah, David's here as well. We met David at the Greyhound last week. Great to see you again, involved in the chat. And Paul giving us the weather report from rugby. It's always damp in rugby, and I can say that. I used to live just down the road. Lewis has given us the local weather report for Saturday, 3 p.m. Hoofing it down, he says. So whether that will factor into Kieran McKenna's plans or not, we'll I guess find out on the day. Let's do a little bit of news, Seb. Not a huge amount. We generally bitch and moan when games move for Sky. You probably got more reason than most about being disappointed about the Southampton situation. Feel free to divulge that if you wish. But two games moving for Sky on the Easter weekend.
Yeah, Blackburn doesn't affect me at all. I'll go to that one regardless, so I guess I get to get a bit more time at home before I have to set off for that one. Southampton is a little bit irritating because I was planning on doing a day trip back from Chester to see it when it was a 3 o'clock, and a 12:30 for me would have been even better regardless of, you know, how the atmosphere is affected and stuff at Portman Road, because I'm flying out to the States. We're both off to Las Vegas, aren't we, on the Tuesday, so it's been a really tough sell to my partner to tell her that the day before we go away for a week, I was planning on shooting back to Ipswich to see some football, and now being a 5:30 kickoff, I don't think I'm going to be able to justify that one. So I'll have to settle for Sky at 5:30. But again, you know, it's what comes of being successful, isn't it? When I looked at the fixture before we booked the trip, I did think there's a good chance that one moves. I think it's a Champions League week, so it's good they haven't shifted it to a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. And I guess out of the slots given away, the 5:30 is much better than the 12:30, isn't it? For the fans generally, for the atmosphere, I guess we'll know where we stand, because there's a 12:30 game that affects us. There's a 3 o'clock game that affects us. So from that point of view, it's the best of a bad bunch. It's just a little bit irritating for me, selfishly.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing for us here on the
podcast. Yes, too right. So,
but yeah, good. The money coming in from Sky hopefully is pretty lucrative. I imagine we've probably been up there with Leeds. Probably is the team featured the most on Sky, I'd imagine.
This is the 16th time, apparently, we've been featured as, you know, a main game on Sky this season. That's the third of the season. That's nuts, isn't it? Absolutely nuts. I wonder how many, someone worked this out. I wonder how long it took us before this season for our last 16 games on Sky. I reckon it was probably over a decade easily.
Need Carl Fuller's book, don't we? Which is downstairs, sadly. Otherwise, I'd grab it. But yeah, let us know in the chat if you can figure out that the last, how long before this season it had taken us to get to 16. Was it 16 games, did you say?
Apparently it's numbers. Those will be 15 and 16, which is a third of the season. Absolutely crazy.
Well, Cardiff before then. So does that include Cardiff?
I presume so. Yeah, it just said 15th to 16th. I think it was Stu Watson who tweeted it or put it out there. So, yeah, crazy, but it goes with being a successful club, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, and 3 p.m. kickoffs. What the hell are they? Moving on, another game that won't be kicking off at 3 p.m., although a future game will be, ITFC Women, part of a excellent Plymouth doubleheader. And your first ITFC Women match on Sunday, Seb?
It is, yes. Normally they play at 2 p.m., obviously at the AGL on a Sunday, which is the pretty much an hour after I set off back home to get up to Chester. So I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, you'll have to look after me. And are you bringing your drum, I assume?
Yeah.
Not? You are? Okay, fair enough. Okay, right. I'll stand a little bit away from you there.
Yeah, that's fine. You don't have to join in with the chants if you don't want to, but hopefully most of them will be familiar. Yeah, but yeah, looking to build off a really positive victory over Rugby Borough last week. So and build momentum and positivity ahead of the game at Portman Road on the 23rd. And the tickets for that have now gone on sale to season ticket holders and members. And I think from Friday, I might be wrong, goes on general sale. So yeah, get involved in that. Selling really well down, certainly down the sides of the pitch. If you want to come and be noisy on the 23rd, Block 6, Section 6 is the place to be. But yeah, really excited. I'm really great that the club and the league have kind of figured out these double headers, because the reverse fixture, I think, was the same as well against Plymouth. So really good to do that and make a weekend of it, isn't it? So yeah, excited. Let's talk about the men's team for Plymouth then, Seb, and this crazy kind of, as I mentioned at the top, this little bit of acrimony, isn't there? Maybe like a love to hate kind of thing, rather than actual proper like Norwich kind of hatred levels. We're not quite there yet, but it does feel like there is kind of a weird aura around Plymouth the Ipswich games now, aren't there? Give us your take on it.
It does, yeah. I actually quite like Plymouth, if I'm being brutally honest. Yeah. You said I'd go a bit brutal at the start on them, but I quite like them. I think they're a well-run club. I like the way they do things. We'll kind of discuss them in more detail. This rivalry that's kind of manifested itself over the last couple of years, obviously, I think the Plymouth fans are a bit like us this season, if we're being honest. We're getting a bit annoyed at the lack of attention, probably, with us and Sheffield Wednesday up there with them last year, and we are too big a size than Plymouth, with all due respect. I think the media, I think Plymouth fans were getting a bit annoyed they weren't getting the credit they deserved. We have to remember they won the league last year. They beat us to the title. Yeah. They beat us to the title last year. And yeah, it was just, we couldn't beat them, could we? We had the late Ballymumba deflected 93rd minute goal at Portman Road that shocked us a little bit. Obviously, the defeat down in September at Home Park was our first defeat of the season. And as these things tend to do in 2023, social media gets involved. Everyone gets a little bit silly. It's a bit hypocritical of us now, you know, throwing our toys out the pram every time we don't get mentioned on Sky or BBC podcasts where they discuss Leeds, Leicester and Southampton. But it is what it is. I have to say, I do quite like Plymouth as a club. I like what they're doing. My first trip down there, never done it before. So looking forward to the weekend, apart from the 5-hour drive one way with mullets next to me.
Yeah. Well, no comment on that. But yeah, it's two teams that have kind of got very similar experience, probably definitely more so than us, of kind of being out on a limb a little bit in terms of geography as well. But lots of, you know, names from, well, I mentioned Paul Marriott and I in the intro, but, you know, David Norris is going to be involved on Saturday, isn't he, as well? And, you know, there's some good, you know, good interactions between the clubs, as it were. And last season, we should be patting each other on the back, frankly, for the seasons that we put together. And, you know, nothing but respect for their season, particularly because I think a lot of us, you know, more hopeful than expectation, were expecting a little bit of a drop off when the loanees situation happened for them last January. And look, they went on and won the league. So happy days. But this is a new season, Seb. What is the state of play for Plymouth going into Saturday?
It feels a bit different, doesn't it? Obviously, Schumacher's moved on. We're used to our kind of ding-dongs with Stephen Schumacher at the helm and I've forgotten the guy's name, Ryan Lowe at the helm, but he's moved on now. And it's a new manager, Foster. Ian Foster's come in from Saudi Arabia. We'll discuss him. And it kind of feels a little bit different. You know, I know we're still going to see many of the same kind of players that we've come to know from our ding-dongs in League One over the last few years, but it's a slightly different formation, maybe a slightly different style. I guess they're doing probably what they expect themselves to be doing. I don't think it's any surprise. Their budget is certainly and probably in the bottom three of the league. So to have themselves where they are on 40 points and 15th in the table, I think is a decent return at this stage. I guess the problem they've got, obviously, is they have this one outstanding player. And come the summer, are they going to be able to fend off bids for him? And I guess that's what kind of sides like Plymouth need to do. They recruit really well. I'm a big fan of some of their recruitment. They take players on loan from the Premier League, which we'll discuss shortly. Those players either get recalled, which leaves them with nothing, or
with the likes of Morgan Whittaker and Ballymumba. I know they weren't Premier League loans, but they were loans from higher up in the pyramid. They can pick them up the following summer for relatively cheap, look to develop them. And, well, in Morgan Whittaker, they'll have a player now who's worth 15, 20 million quid. So it'll be a case of, you know, the vultures will start circling in the summer. But until then, they'll look to establish themselves, get across the line to see themselves safe, which I think they will do, and look to go again next year. They've won 10 of the 34 games played so far this season, won 10, drawn 10, and lost 14. Goals, 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 I have written in the script. They are free scoring.
It's goals galore.
They are also very, very loose at the back. 53 goals scored is the sixth highest in the league. It's ahead of teams like West Brom and Hull, who are in the playoff positions. But 57 goals conceded is the third highest in the league after Rotherham and Blackburn. So expect goals at the weekend because they are free scoring, but they will give a lot of chances away as well.
Yeah, a lot of love in the chat for both Ryan Hardy, David here saying Hardy a real threat, Whittaker as well. Tony, we need to keep Morgan Whittaker quiet. Shame you never signed for us. Yeah. A universe doesn't care. Welcome to good to have you back, as always, with that great username, 100% the one that got away. And we don't really know the story there, do we? But I do like the conspiracy theory that, you know, there was chats and whether there's interest there and whether we kind of made kind of moves to kind of encourage Swansea to recall him.
It could have been a stroke of genius if we did. It meant nothing, obviously. It didn't matter. But fair play. If they had dropped away and we get across the line with Sheffield Wednesday and that was the reason, then that would be an absolute masterstroke by Mark Ashton.
Yeah, Sean here always plays well v Town. If we can keep him quiet on Saturday, he's expecting a Town win. Max, Whittaker plays in the space that leaves when he bombs forward. We are going to have to be smart in the transition. Yeah, definitely a lot of work for Burgess there. But yeah, Colin's a fan, and Universe doesn't care, as I said. Hardy and Whittaker, a little bit of a partnership. But there's more than those two as well, as we'll talk to later on. But as you mentioned, yeah, good in both boxes. And we've said similar to lots of teams, haven't we? And realistically, if you can't keep it tight at the back, and I know we're ones to talk in that respect, it is going to make it difficult for you, isn't it? Form-wise, Seb, not the best, though.
No, 19th in the five-game form table. One win, which was last weekend, a bit of a coupon buster, wasn't it? They won 2-0 at the Riverside against Borough. And if you watch the highlights, they were certainly good value for that win. Yeah, Middlesbrough just can't get going and making mockery of idiots like you and me who predicted them to be in the top two back in the summer. So that's a great result. One draw against Coventry, another side doing well. Three defeats, Sunderland, Leeds and West Brom. Five goals scored, 10 goals against in the last five games. The home form, however, is decent. Now, this was a running theme of last season. We sat here so many times and didn't they average 2.5 points per game last year? It was something mental. It was like over 60 points from the 23 home games played last season. So we know home park is a bit of a fortress. We know it's a hell of a long way for a lot of sides to go and travel. I think that helps them massively. And again, this season it's proving decent. They've won 28 of the points so far on the board have come from the home games, which is 70% of their total tally. 38 goals scored at home, a plus 8 goal difference. They have lost the last two, like I just mentioned, against Leeds and against West Brom. So maybe something there for the kind of the playoff chasing sides, the automatic promotion sides going there and doing a job. The last five at home is one win, two draws, and then the two defeats like we've just discussed. So it is a tough place to go. They're going to need to keep the home form steady because their away form isn't that amazing at all. And it's kind of not the same levels of last year. That was never sustainable in terms of 2.5 points per game at home. But to keep it a fortress this season has aided them really, really well. And I don't think they'll go down, do you? They're on 40 points now. I know there's only kind of 5 points ahead of the bottom three as it stands because everybody in the bottom six seemed to win last weekend. But with the goal scoring ability they've got in the side, I know we've just said they will ship a lot, but with, you know, Whittaker, with Hardy, with those kind of players available, I can't see that they've got enough firepower, I think, to comfortably kind of stay up this season. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and the thing that bodes well for them in terms of keeping themselves out of danger, you mentioned the home form isn't as good as it was last season. And as you said, difficult to sustain that. The average position based on the current league table of the teams they've beaten is 17th. They're quite happy. You know, it's a lazy cliche, isn't it? The flat track bully, but there is an extent to which they are picking up wins against the teams you'd expect them to. The odds you know, there's a victory over Norwich and Sunderland in there as well. They beat Norwich 6-2, just to remind everyone. But generally, you know, they get the results against the teams you'd expect them to, and maybe struggle against the teams up in the top six. So, you know, again, that maybe bodes well for us, but it also bodes well for them in terms of the rest of the season, isn't it? Picking up points. But yeah, the form isn't the greatest. Only one of the last six. So it's a little bit middling the form at home, but they've definitely got the ability, and yeah, it's this fortress, isn't it? Borough, do we take anything out of this Borough game? Obviously, the away match. I just thought Borough were so passive. They hardly engaged when Plymouth, P team, went forward. They just backed off, didn't they? They gave him so much time and space to pick off these shots from around the 18-yard box. And it could have been 4-0 at halftime. Borough just totally not at the races, Seb. So do we read much into this one, or is it more about Borough than it is about Plymouth, this victory?
Arguably it is. Well, you've got to give Plymouth some credit. They made some tactical changes. They pushed a player further forward into a kind of number 10 role. His shot was saved and a follow-up was scored, and he got an assist for the second one. But yeah, I mean, Borough, they're so bizarre this season, aren't they? You know, they can beat Chelsea 1-0 in a cup semi-final first leg and then lose to somebody the following weekend who, totally unexpected. Last week would have been a coupon buster, but Plymouth were really, really good value for it. Like you say, it could have been 4 at half time. The XG, hello XG fans, 1.93 to Borough's 0.5, 22 shots, 11 of which were on target, three big chances created. They were happy to sit back and let Borough have the ball. They only had 32% possession, and they just looked to hit them time after time on the counter-attack. Six direct counter-attacks resulted in 5 shots. They were perfectly happy to say to them, you have the ball, and as soon as we win it, boom, they go. They hit teams quickly in transition. And I guess given our possession kind of stats, we might have a similar kind of similar time against them on Saturday.
Yeah, Sunderland away, there was Ryan Hardy scored a goal on the break that just totally caught them out. So there's pace in that team to counter. But yeah, it just felt like every time they went forward, they were going to score, which we need to be wary of, given our openness at the back. We've also got, so Graham here, thank you, all the Plymouth fans getting involved. Really appreciate your insights. Graham saying Foster lost his way recently with too many changes, but against Borough reverted to a more familiar starting 11. And David here as well, last two home games were poor. We look shattered. Plus, we've had to bed in a new batch of players because of loans going and a new manager. Borough, probably our best performance for a long time. So maybe coming into form at maybe the right time there at Plymouth. Did you see the West Brom game? A few people have talked about that in terms of things that give us hope. I think someone in the chat needs to see if I can find it, is not expecting a repeat of that. Yeah, the universe doesn't care. Our favourite username. Destroy them at home, but we're not going to play like that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the formation, Seb, but a threat down the wings definitely spacing feels like
behind the wing backs
our opportunity, the overall, doesn't it?
Yeah, the message I got was spacing behind the wing backs, so you're going to want fast, kind of tricky players. We'll discuss our likely lineup, but I watched the highlights of the West Brom game, the extended highlights, and it seemed to me time out, especially down the left, that Mickey Johnson, the guy on loan from Celtic, he was getting loads of space in behind their right fullback, wasn't he?
Yep. Let's talk about the manager then. It's not a name that is massively familiar to lots of people. But again, you mentioned the recruitment of players. Again, it feels like a little bit of analytics data perhaps involved in this appointment, dare we say. Ian Foster.
I think so, yeah. Ian Foster's come in at the start of January. Obviously, Stephen Schumacher went off to Stoke and took most of the backroom kind of side with him. Not going well there at all, is it?
What's your take on Stoke then, Seb? John Walters has had to do a press release, kind of galvanising the fan base. We know that Stoke is a kind of a fearsome place to go for an away match, isn't it? It's just not gelling there, and you kind of feel like there's a point.
Manager,
yeah, go on. Yes,
the managers, it doesn't matter who the manager is. You know, you've had Michael O'Neill go there, Stephen Schumacher, Paul Lambert, joking. And they just can't get going. They've got these ridiculously rich billionaire Bet365 owners. They have FFP issues. They can't spend money. And they just seem, it seems one of those clubs where no matter what you try and do, the issues are bigger, perhaps off the field with the structure and the setup and stuff. But he did really well at Plymouth, didn't he? You know, he was a really bright up-and-coming manager, one who I think we all secretly liked, despite the kind of stuff going on between the two clubs last year. And now Ian Foster's come in. And like you say, it does strike me as a bit of a kind of smart recruitment, very highly thought of in the England kind of youth setups. He left Al Etifak. He was Stephen Gerrard's assistant manager. He left there to go to
to go to Plymouth. Only managed 11 games so far. 1-4, drawn 3, lost 4, 1.36 points per game. That equates to 63 points across a full season, which is fine, isn't it? That gets you, what, 15th, 16th, probably 17th, 14th maybe. So they'll be pretty comfortable if they can maintain that kind of form. He's known best in footballing circles from his time in the England setup. He was a part of the coaching team in the England under-17 World Cup when they won it. He then became England head coach at under-18, 19 and 20 levels. He was Phil Neville's assistant manager for the England women's side as well. Paul Cook took him to Portsmouth in 2015. Go on, where's we've not heard this for ages. Go on, do the voice.
No, I'm out of practice. I'll be rubbish. Keep going.
He took him to Portsmouth there, culminating in 2015, culminating with the promotion in 2017. Not a brief playing career, but a playing career not to write home of. He was a striker who played for lower league sides, Kidderminster, Chester, Barrow, Hereford. Nothing to write home about from a footballing kind of playing point of view. But great work in the England youth setup, and I guess that's what's attracted the eye of Plymouth, and I guess they'll hope they've pulled another blinder.
We're going to start singing the Eye of the Tiger then. Let's move it on before I have to bring out the Paul Cook impression, which is massively
rusty. Go on, give the people what they want.
I can't even remember how to do it now, Seb. Yeah, no, just lost it. It's the Westlife key change that makes it. I'm out.
Well, you can stand up at the same time as doing it.
I'm already stood up. I stand up every week. Here's a trade secret. Stand up desk, everyone. Talk to us about history, because it's generally positive, isn't it?
Yeah, we have the edge, 24 Ipswich wins, 16 draws and 13 Plymouth wins. The last win, obviously, as we all know, was 3-2 back in October at Portman Road. Ballymumber own goal, George Hurst and Marcus Harness with the goals for Ipswich. Morgan Whittaker, worldie. Guess what? He was playing on the right-hand side, cutting on his left and unleashed one from yardage, which people got very upset about. I remember people saying, well, we know what he's going to do. Why didn't we stop him? And I think it might have been Mikey commented saying, how did Ian Robin and all those kind of players score so many goals in their careers? Sometimes you have to say, you know, great, great quality players will find ways to score magical goals. Yeah. And that's exactly what he is. Do you remember the George Edmondson foul?
Didn't it? It clipped the post. It was like perfectly placed.
Perfect. Yeah, it was absolutely perfect. The technique, the effort, we kind of bemoaned so many times last season. They were getting deflected goals that we found to our cost at Home Park earlier in the season. But that one was clean and crisp as a whistle, if that's a saying. I don't know.
Deep, remember the crisp George, and even.
Do you remember the George Edmondson foul at 1-0 down? That could have... Nope. Neither do I. It was a great piece of refereeing. Refereeing and fully deserved. Yeah, they went 1-0 up.
Way to our worldie. Watches.
3-1, and then Joe Edwards pulled one back relatively late on, but we saw out the win. The last game at Home Park was the first defeat of last season back in September. Freddie Ladapo with an amazing deflected goal. I think it was his first league goal of the season that went over Cooper. And then two goals, Ballymumba. Chaplin kind of went down too easily. Mumba scored. And then Morgan Whittaker with the deflection got the win. We were good value that day. Do you remember Christian Walton hitting the bar in the last minute from the corner?
Against his old club as well.
Plymouth fan, yeah. We spoke to him on this channel.
Plymouth fans, if you want to see an interview with Christian Walton, to go searching on our channel. Got a really good anecdote about Roman Lario, who I'm sure is a name that's familiar to you as well. So do check that out. But yeah, that would have been a brilliant moment if Walton had scored the equaliser, right? But
I think it was a save, wasn't it? When it slowed down the replays, Cooper got a touch, yeah, and tipped it onto the bar. I mean, he's a brilliant keeper. And that would have been quite a moment. The last time we won there was December 2020, 1-0 down, then a red card for Danny Mayer, and then two very quick succession, 73rd and 74th minute goals from John Nolan and Caden Jackson saw us get across the line 2-1. Last week, you cheated with this. Have you cheated this time and done research for the lineup quiz?
I said I'd only do it once. It's not funny if I do it twice.
Okay, so, fair enough then. I think you'll struggle with this one. This is about 2 months before Lambert gets fired. Yeah, the COVID season. Yeah.
So we've started. So it's the season of the Ollie Hawkins.
Yes, the NHS Carers Trust on the shirt, the blue badge, the
Ollie Hawkins. Stephen. Stephen Ward.
Yeah, he played left back. Yeah, it was a 4-3-3, it looks like, but it could be anything judged on the players that started the game.
Who's the third one who was in goal? I can't remember the goalkeeper.
Currently at Preston. Save a penalty. Currently at Preston, didn't save a penalty against Leeds.
Di Cornell. Keenan Bennett.
No.
I'm trying to remember the...
It's the right squad, yeah. You're just not getting any of the players right.
I guess Chamber would have been involved, wouldn't he?
Chamber was right back. Current player was playing in the back line, did the pre-match presser today.
Paul Wolfie.
Yep. Alongside him was a loanee from Arsenal.
McGuinness.
Yeah, so you've got the back five.
Yep.
Three central midfielders. One goal scorer.
Nolan, you mentioned.
Yep. You won't get the other two.
Oh, okay, fine. Give us some clues. Are they... they're not loans, are they?
One is with your mate Paul Cook at Chesterfield.
Dobra.
Yeah, well, I don't think he was a central midfielder. This is what BBC Sport reckons. Okay. The other central midfielder was always parachuted in a bit by Paul Cook. And then I think he got subbed like at 45 minutes at one point by Paul Lambert. I don't think he ever got a fair crack of the whip. I think he's playing non-league at the moment.
Norwood, Bishop. I think it's too late for Bishop, isn't it? It's gone by then.
No, Bishop's still there, but he didn't play.
Nope.
Brett McGavin.
Oh, he scores long ranges a lot in non-league. Yeah.
And then you've got the front three. So one you've already got, the goal scorer who'll be on the bench on Saturday. Yep. So the two
Not
either
Hawkins.
Side of him.
No, Hawkins. Okay.
Two either side of him. One player out of position. Irish, awful injury at Portman Road. Never got going. Yeah. And the other side was kind of a player who I really, really liked the look of and was really hopeful he was going to kind of be the latest youth product to take as far as back to the championship. He's currently at Cambridge, I think, still.
Lancaster.
Lancaster, yeah, there you go. It was a tough one for that, wasn't it? Good. I enjoyed seeing you squirm after.
That's not a vintage team, is it? But we got the win, eh?
Yeah, we did apparently. But they had a red card on the 70th minute and they were 1-0 up at the time. So I think that kind of changed the game.
Strange, how things happen. Yeah, Matt got in there just a little bit too late. I don't know if that was after I said it or before, Matt. But Eric Clapton says Doug Moran. There you go. I think that's a blast in the past, isn't it? So, yeah, good stuff. Well, not good stuff. That was a crap season, wasn't it?
You deserve that for cheating last year. That's your punishment for dishonesty.
I feel like, I got a few of them, didn't I? I got the signings. I just remember three signings in Portman Road.
Do you remember that? Outside the training ground holding three shirts. Guy Cornell, Ollie Hawkins, and Stephen Ward. Brilliant. Wow.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across six different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Well, should we talk about the arrivals for Plymouth in the January window then? Because it is a little bit of... victims of their own success in terms of the players that left, isn't it? Give us the rundown on who let's focus on who left first, Seb, because there are some big names.
This is the fashion, isn't it? You kind of have these half-season loans now. You take a player on loan in the summer, you kind of figure in the old days they'll be there for the entire year, but now, if they do well and you develop them a little bit, you run that risk of the parent club coming calling and either moving them to another loan to a side further up the food chain, bringing them back into their own setup or looking to sell them. And that's what they've kind of been the victim of. Luke Cundall played well in the Portman Road game, I remember. He's gone to Stoke. So obviously Schumacher had a hand in that one. He was recalled by Wolves, sent out to Stoke. He'd made 24 appearances and scored three goals. Finn Azaz is the big one, recalled by Villa, sold to Middlesbrough for £2.5 million.
I see him play last week, didn't he?
Yeah, 26. Six appearances, seven goals. Kane Kessler-Hayden was a right back. He was recalled. He was rapid on the day, if I remember rightly, at Portman Road, wasn't he?
He was also on loan end of last season, wasn't he, as well?
We'll see. I'll take your word for that. 27 appearances recalled by Villa. Lewis Warrington didn't really feature. He's an Everton kind of academy prospect. He only made a couple of starts, but he got recalled. Matt Butcher went. He wasn't recalled anywhere. He went to Wickham on a free. And Macaulay Gillespie went to Charlton, centre back. He went there on a free. So what they've done is they've kind of lost this, well, 77 appearances between Kundal, Azaz, and Kessel Hayden so far this season. They've lost those players. What they've done is they've gone out and kind of tried to bring in kind of further Premier League loans for the second half of the year. Lino Sousa's come in from Villa. He's a left back. Ashley Phillips, ex-Blackburn, highly rated, physical centre back, has come in from Spurs, as is Alfie Devine, who's like an attacking midfielder, number 10 kind of player. Darko JB, we'll discuss a bit more later, has come in from Leeds. Matthew Cirinola has come in on a free from Union SG. And Adam Forshaw has come in from Norwich. He's adding a bit of experience. He's 32 now, central midfielder. He's come in from Norwich on a free, presumably to kind of fill the hole that Matt Butcher's left by moving on. So yeah, a load of young talent has departed in the window, and they've gone out for the second half to cover themselves with a load more kind of young talent. And I guess the policy is sound, isn't it? You kind of get these players in with the hope that if they don't do anything outstanding, you might be able to pick them up, develop them further. It worked for Whittaker, it worked for Ballymumba. But if they do have a great first 6 months of the year, the likes of Kundal, Kessler Hayden, Finn Azaz being the big one, you run that risk where you lose those players. You have nothing to show for it because you ain't getting any fees for them because they're not your players in the first place. And I guess the question would be, how sustainable and how long can you keep on doing that? As I said, it's 77 appearances from those three players taken away from your side. You ain't got nothing to show for it, no money to go out and recruit, so you can only go and loan again. And it's crucial that you keep getting that right year after year to keep your head above the water, isn't it? I would worry how long you can keep pulling kind of rabbits out of hats.
But if you've got if you're good with the Y Scout or your dashboards, and you're able to keep providing more and more targets, then, you know, I remember us talking about Plymouth in January last year, before, you know, in the pre-match show, again, ahead of the Portman Road game, and we were kind of looking at the players that came in online and thought, these are risks, you know, risks in respect of they are not as experienced as players that may have, they've come in for. But yet, it still keeps working for them. There's a point where there's enough of a sample size to prove that it's okay. Of course, it isn't necessarily sustainable, but if Plymouth were to get into the top six suddenly, then there's a much better chance of attracting those kind of players to sign permanent deals, like Whittaker, for example, and Mumba. So it does work from time to time. And then if you sell Morgan Whittaker for 20, yeah, 30 million.
He's the poster child, isn't he? Yeah, he's the poster child.
It just takes one or two quid of those. That's game changing for Plymouth's budget, isn't it? So you just get, you keep prospecting, you know, JB is one that you kind of think, if, you know, great prospect, Man City, I think, Leeds, as you mentioned, you know, if they could sign him, if Leeds go up, for example, hope they don't, but if they go up, they get him for £1 million or something. And then he has a great season in the Championship. He's a £10 million player, isn't he? So
yeah,
it's not a bad model. But as you say, it maybe doesn't get you
as
right.
As long as you can sell one for big money every, what, 2 or 3 years, it's fine, isn't it? The issue would be is if you replace a load of loanies with loanies and then you can't sign them and you have to do it all again and a couple of years go by, then you kind of struggle a little bit.
We mentioned that the system and what kind of Foster's trying to do. A few of our Plymouth friends have kind of given us the insight there. It does feel, having watched certainly the Borough game, I'd look at on the average positions for Borough, it does look like a very asymmetrical system at the back, like we do with Davis bombing on. This kind of Brendan Galloway that is the left back, who's basically playing on the halfway line. And then I think it was Sorinola who was on the right hand side, who's more of the orthodox. Is it a back three, Seb, or is it something a little bit of a hybrid like ours?
I think it's a bit of a hybrid. I mean, they were playing 4-3-3, weren't they, under Schumacher for the first half of the season. The fullbacks would invert, the Whittaker one side, Ballymumba the other side would kind of, you know what they're going to do. They're going to cut inside and look to get shots off. We know them as a three at the backside from last season, and that's kind of what Foster's reverted to. It's been a 3-4-3 or a 3-4-2-1. Interestingly, against West Brom and Leeds, it was the 3-4-2-1 where the two tens played sort of a little bit narrower, I guess, to try and congest the centre of the park, and then they would look to to find the space in behind the advancing attacking fullback. So yeah, three at the back. As Rich said, if you're a Plymouth fan in the chat, let us know if we're right on that one. But it's very much a three at the back system, and he has changed it from what Schumacher was using for the first kind of half of the season. I did what I did last week. Remember, I looked at the five games before Mowbray joined for Birmingham, and then the five games afterwards. I did a similar for Foster to see if there were any kind of insights. Now, there are a couple of caveats for this. You know, they have played the likes of West Brom and Leeds in the five games since he took over. And I think they had games that had three red cards on the bounce in the five games before he took over. So some of the stats are a little bit skewed. But overall, the XG has dropped from 1.65 per game to 0.93. Possession has dropped from an average of 50% to 38%. Shots taken has dropped from 18 to 10. Total passing has dropped from 456 per game to 331. And the one thing that's gone up is long balls. That's increased from an average of 49 per game to 63. Wow. So it would suggest maybe he's gone three at the back, looking to make them a little bit more direct. Now, we've got to remember, he's had a load of new players thrown on him as well from the January kind of window. So I guess it's a kind of horses for courses maybe kind of deal. We'll get a better idea of how he really wants to play after a pre-season. But I thought it was interesting that he has looked to make them more direct in the short term since taking charge.
Yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of what we were talking about with Tony Mowbray last week in Birmingham City, isn't it? So, maybe, as you say, maybe more horses for courses, and it worked at Borough, didn't it? So, yeah, something to keep an eye on there. We've mentioned a lot of the key players, so we'll kind of skip through this because I'm noting that we're getting to 40 minutes and we just talked about Plymouth. So, Whittaker, 17 goals, 7 assists, by far the most dangerous player. We know what he can do. Ryan Hardy as well, we talked about him in the chat, 12 goals, 4 assists. Isn't always a starter, but definitely a threat. Mention from our Plymouth colleagues that Bali Mumba hasn't been as impactful.
He hasn't. We know him from, you know, running down the flanks. He's not been great so far this season. 2 goals, 3 assists. Mikkel Miller is kind of the left wing alternative, the left wing back who might well start at the weekend. Bali Mumba's not pulling up any trees, shall we say. The centre backs we know, Brendan Galloway, Lewis Gibson, Dan Scar kind of provides the cover. Julio Plethaglo, I'm going to say. No idea if that's right. There's a summer signing. He covers the right hand side of the back three.
Legithuelo.
Very well done. Joe Randall and Jordan Houghton will be their central midfielders. Darko Jaby, who we discussed just briefly on him, they kind of bought him in as a number 8, a central midfielder. In the Middlesbrough game, they pushed him further forward into kind of a number 10-ish kind of role, one of the two 10s behind the striker. It was his shot that was followed up for the opening goal. Then he got an assist for the second one. So he might well be starting in that slightly more advanced role. If he doesn't, and he does start centre mid, then expect a coming together him and Morsey. They both average kind of 2 fouls per game. So that could be quite an interesting battle to watch out. Michael Cooper is back from injury. He picked up a ligament, I think it was medial ligament damage in December. Connor Hazard has been playing in the sticks most of the season. He's got 5 clean sheets in 25 appearances. Michael Cooper, however, is back, and we know what a good quality keeper he is.
We do. And no notable absentees. I mean, in terms of the stats, we've talked about the possession and the slight regression to a more pragmatic style, shall we say, under Foster of late. The goal situation, I mean, this is pretty consistent with Plymouth when we've talked about them. When we talked about this at the start, they maybe score more goals than the quality of the chances that XG would have them scoring, perhaps. But some good stats in terms of home goals. And then the flip side, it's very Birmingham-y, isn't it, this feeling? We were talking about Birmingham's situation. Do you want to give us the potted stats on attacking and defensive stats?
Yes, we discussed their prowess in front of goal. They are a high-scoring side. 38 goals scored at home is the fourth highest in the league. The XG, however, has them down. That's a +9 difference between what XG thinks they should have scored at home versus the goals they've actually got. So I think for the third or fourth podcast in a row, we are sat here discussing the sustainability of the chances they create. But I think, as you said last year, the longer it keeps on going, it doesn't become, you know, an anomaly anymore. It becomes the norm. So that's where they are at with that one. 7 goals scored from direct counterattacks is the highest in the league. Shock, they like a pop from range, as we found out in the Portman Road game. 42% of their shots come from outside the box, which is the third highest. And then, as I said at the start, they do concede goals. 30 goals conceded at home is the worst in the league. 15 shots conceded per game is also the worst in the league. 7 goals conceded from set pieces is the third highest in the league. And whilst they are very good at direct attacking counterattacks, they are also pretty susceptible to having counterattacks against them. They've conceded 3 goals, which is the second highest so far in the league as well.
So you're telling me there'll be goals. When will they be? So this becomes a weekly routine now. If Brilliant. I mean, if there are going to be goals, Seb, it might be early doors, right?
Yeah, there's going to be goals. It'll be in the first 10 minutes. Between us and Plymouth, we are two of the three worst side for starting games so far this season from a goals conceded perspective.
Wait, we've so conceded goals.
10 goals in
we'll
the opening 10.
Out.
No, I don't think so. We conceded 10 goals in the opening 10 minutes of games. Plymouth have conceded 6. We're the joint worst in the division. They are the third joint worst. So make sure you're in your seats for kickoff because you might miss. If you're not in the seats by 10 minutes past, you might have missed all the goals in the game.
Could be 3-3 at 10 minutes in, folks. And do keep a lookout for former Town skipper and former Plymouth player David Norris, who's handing out 1,330 Cornish pasties to fans at the game as part of, I think it's like a Sky for the Fans initiatives, but I think it's a thank you on his behalf for the fundraising. He's been selling, auctioning shirts off, a situation there behind the scenes that I think you can research and find out more about, but has had a challenging time. But it was potentially forced to sell his champions medal, which won with Argyle for winning League One or Second Division as it was then. But the fans raised money, so he didn't have to do that. So yeah, keep a lookout for David Norris handing out Cornish pasties on Saturday. If you've got any further insights, certainly Plymouth fans, about Plymouth, let us know. But we are going to talk about Ipswich. This is an Ipswich Town podcast, and plenty of stuff as well. Situations for Kieran McKenna to have to think about and manage. Do get your thoughts on possible lineups now. I know a lot of people have been putting stuff in the chat earlier, but now is a good time to recycle it because we'll talk through it. But let's go through bits and pieces of admin before we talk about Ipswich. If you want to check back our predictions for the rest of the month, there's a video that Craig did. It's about 5-6 minutes long, so not particularly long, trying to give our team's predictions for the outcomes for the 5 matches in March and the points tally. So do give that watch and let us know your thoughts in the comments. As always, the flagship show back Sunday, talking about Plymouth after the fact. And we'll also have a little bit of a mini preview of Bristol City as a separate show that will go out on Monday. Obviously, that's a midweek game, three-game week coming up, so we'll be previewing that in an additional bonus bit of content. And as always, we're brought to you in partnership with the Greyhound. Head there ahead of Bristol City on Tuesday night. And NordVPN, there's a link in the description if you want a discounted access to NordVPN, and use that however you see fit. If you want to stay safe or access streaming content from other regions, that's exactly what it's there to do. And I think, yeah, let's talk about us then, Seb. The big issue, Broadhead and Burns both got muscle injuries and will not feature. But given what we talked about in terms of Plymouth's system and perhaps the risk of attacks down the wide positions, I mean, it's probably a great game for Burns, but Amari Hutchins, probably the form player in the league, and Jeremy Sarmiento is no slouch either. So actually, you know, obviously you don't want to lose those players, but Sarmiento, Hutchinson, they come straight in, don't they?
Yes, I think Hutchinson certainly does. I've just got this feeling in the back of my mind. I think he played Caden Jackson there last season against them when they had a back three. And I wouldn't be shocked, given the injuries, if we saw Jackson line up in one of the wide, not the wide right, that would be Burns. But if Jackson was wide left at the weekend, I wouldn't be 100% shocked. But I think it'll probably be, I think it might be Harness. I think it'll be Harness on the left, Chaplin in the middle. And that won't work because you can't play Hutchinson. No, sorry, it'll be
Well, and Hutchinson. You said Burns as well, so you mean Hutchinson.
Yeah, but Burns on the right. Right.
Burns is not playing. Burns isn't good.
Burns oh, yeah, isn't, of course. Yeah. I've confused myself, haven't I? Right.
Hutchinson, right.
Let me start again. Hutchinson on the right. Chaplin, he says, might feature, didn't he? He's training tomorrow and he expects him to play a part.
On Friday, so for those listening on Saturday. Yep,
yeah, so I assume he starts in the 10 and will probably get subbed relatively early in the second half, which means it's the left-hand side. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Jackson. I think it'll be Harness. I'm not sure. Would you trust Sarmiento from the start? He doesn't always have the same impact when he starts games, does he?
Well, and that's the Whittaker's side as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think Harness maybe for the energy, for the more disciplined of the options to come in. So, yeah, I think I'd go Burns, Hutchinson wide right, Chaplin through the middle, and then Harness on the left if it gets to 60 minutes, Chaplin's done, then you slot Hutchinson inside and you bring on Sarmiento.
If Chaplin isn't fit to start,
Harness in the 10, and I'd play Harness in the 10.
You wouldn't think maybe about a two up front with Moore and Al Hamadi?
No. Are you mad? Really? We will never play two up front unless we're chasing a game. It just won't happen. McKenna is methodical.
When you're chasing Preston.
A game. Yeah, you're chasing a game. You're 2-0, 3-0 down at half time.
You said they'll never play two up front. You just
And if you'd listen, instead of rudely interrupting me, I said afterwards, unless we are chasing a game, there's no chance. We know what this side does. McKenna is not suddenly going to, with what, 12 games to go, start going, oh, I'll play 4-4 effing 2. No, yeah, unless we are chasing
Moore's
a game.
More in the 10. Moore's a
unless we worker. Are, unless we're chasing a game, they will not start as a pairing. Okay. One might start wide. Al-Hamadi maybe might start out wide sometime, but I would be astounded if they started as a pair from the off.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm just putting it out there. You know, just options.
Well, you're wrong.
We don't, and you're stupid as well. Yeah. So we'll see. I think Sarmiento starts, if I'm honest, but I do see the logic in Harness, to be fair. And yeah, maybe if Chaplin isn't fit, then you'd see both of those, I think, wouldn't you?
So, I'd worry about the space of Davis bombing forward and Sarmiento ahead of him. I think Whittaker might lick his lips and see an awful lot of ground he can cause havoc in.
We haven't. Universe doesn't care. I wonder what McKenna's thoughts are on Tuan Zabi beyond the season. Excellent last week, but he's had less game time than Edmondson. A few people about Edmondson in the chat, a few people about Tuan Zabi in the chat. Harry Clark is still around and also is a good threat down that right-hand side as well. Is there a who's playing right back for you, Seb?
If he's fully fit, I'd play Clark. I know Tuan Zabi was really good last weekend. Man of the match, got the assist for the Sarmiento goal late on in the 81st minute, in fact. But I just think Clark, he looked so good in recent weeks. He offers you more from an attacking point of view than Tuan Zabi does. So if he's fully fit and ready to go, I'd have Clark in there personally.
Yeah, a lot of people saying Al-Hamadi in the chat, Seb. Just to put it out there for you. Maybe
we
out
will not
wide.
Play two up there front. Yeah, I guess if he can do a job there out wide, then fair enough. But also, is that not a big risk as well to play somebody out of position on the side that is Plymouth's strongest side?
Maybe. Stick Hutch out there. He can play both sides, can't he?
But
cutting in.
On the right. Then you've got to put Jackson on the right.
Fine.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, okay.
Or does Al-Hamadi not go on the right? Is he left-sided, is he?
I don't know which side he can play, but I don't think it's his natural position. I think you're kind of trying to force something in there that you don't need to do, given the other options that you've potentially got.
Oh, really triggering you, isn't it, this?
No,
fine.
I mean, come the team sheet at 2 o'clock on Saturday, I'm like an idiot when they're starting up front.
Don't worry about
4-4-2 or 5-3.
Yeah, Tuan Zabi at right back, Sarmiento left wing. Midfield, Seb, any change to the Morsi Luongo partnership? It's going to be tasty, isn't it?
They've had a week off, haven't they? So I think Moore's in Luongo in this one, and I presume either Travis or Taylor. Taylor's back, isn't he? I presume he'll come in for the midweek game against Bristol. But for this, I'd have Moore's in Luongo up against Houghton and Randell.
We mentioned Bristol City. That we will be going live straight after the game on Tuesday night as well, by the way. Another plug, sorry. Mikey, Seb doing their usual duo duties, and then I'll puff and heave myself up the hill to join in and swear a little bit more. So do join us on Tuesday night after Bristol City for post-match reaction there. I don't feel like any clearer really about what's going to happen on Saturday Ipswich-wise, but David has asked for it, our Plymouth friend. Let's do some predictions. If you put stuff in the chat, the host will read it. And thank you to everyone on Facebook, Jason, you and Gary, Ben, Louise, Matt and Scott for giving us a thumbs up. There's lots of you here tonight. Great to see so many people, especially opposition supporters as well. Do give us a thumbs up and do subscribe as well. As I mentioned, we'll be back on Sunday to talk about the game, but also try and give this level of insight, in inverted commas, to every opposition that Ipswich play. So if you're coming up against the team a week or two afterwards, then that hopefully is still relevant for you as well. But great to see so many of you out there. Please do give us a thumbs up to at least acknowledge Seb's hard work and me slagging him off as I do, because it's not working, Seb. You keep winning in the bloody prediction league. And I tell you, the 2-point delta to me was predicting Ipswich Town 3, Birmingham City 1. So congratulations for that. In terms of the league table, though, a little bit of catching up to do. 10 points behind Telegram, 3 points behind. Now represented by our mate Jacob, who's actually, I think he's local to Plymouth, actually. Jacob, I don't know if he's in the chat. So feel free to show yourself, Jacob, if you want to give us some of your predictions. But let's put them up on the screen, Seb. Again, there's a lot of narrative around all the games. I remember in the middle part of the season, we didn't really care about most of the games. But now half the league is kind of entrenched in a little bit of a relegation dogfight, and half the league, let's say six of the league are hoping they can sneak into the last two playoff spots. And then you've got the top four kind of doing their own little thing. West Brom, Coventry, a nice little bit of a West Midlands derby. They're all predicting West Brom that too good at home, really, aren't they? Any other games? Yeah, another derby in Yorkshire?
Yeah, we're hopeful, aren't we? Huddersfield Leeds. That's the early kickoff. That's the 12:30. There's a couple of 12:30s. That's one of them, isn't it?
I think we're
hopeful. Huddersfield have picked up a bit of form since firing Darren Moore, and I guess you know they played Chelsea played Leeds last night. Unfortunately, didn't go to extra time. So Leeds have had a midweek game, but you and me going for the. Oh, look at that! You're copying a lot of my results. That's weird. It'll started to overtake you, seeing as you get the script about 3 hours before we go live. That's a strange tactic, isn't it? I think we're both kind of hopeful. Might do something, but in reality we both expect Leeds to win that one, as we do with Birmingham against Southampton. That would be nice if Jay Stansfield could do us a favour or Andre Dizel could do us a favour, but I think we both think Southampton will get back on form, which makes our game pretty important, doesn't it?
I've gone for a narrow Southampton win. I did think Birmingham were not as bad maybe as the scoreline set out, and they are a different beast at home. But Southampton, did you watch any of the Liverpool game with Southampton? That was a beatable team for Southampton, and they had so many chances.
Did they rotate heavily? I watched the Chelsea Leeds game, so Liverpool didn't make a lot of changes.
Few, but not many. It's pretty strong, but they wasted so many chances and then got smashed 3-0 and. Hopefully there's some motivational morale that's been dented there, but probably not. Leicester were expecting them to do the job at home against QPR, albeit QPR, one of those teams down the bottom that are in form. Maybe Millwall are as well, though you're predicting a draw there. Me and Jacob think Millwall might get a home win there. Watford just inconsistent. I've gone for a Norwich win over Sunderland. I just don't know how to predict Sunderland at the moment.
Yeah.
Another Yorkshire derby down the bottom. Rotherham, Sheffield Wednesday, we're all predicting 2-1 away wins there.
Do you think Wednesday are going to stay up?
I think they might sneak it. Yeah.
Danny Rowe's done a great job, hasn't he?
Yeah, and you can figure out where my question might have gone if I was going to speak about Danny Rowe, but I'm going to keep that one for another day.
That kind of stuff, no.
Stoke, you're predicting, after watching the Plymouth Borough highlights, you're predicting that Borough are going to score 2 at Stoke.
Yeah, because Stoke is shit. That's my logic. That's my logic.
As you're working, Swansea Blackburn is a bit meh. Let's talk about our game then. I am going for a draw. You are going for an away win, as is Jacob. Jacob's changed his mind as well. He did go for a draw initially, but has gone for the win. Show me your working behind Plymouth 1, Ipswich 2.
Both sides score goals, so I think there will be goals in it. It'll probably be Morgan Whittaker or Ballymember off the bench from range. And I think we've got to keep this momentum and this kind of run going. It'll be 5 league wins on the bounce. We did check out our video that Craig did with our 5-6-7 minute kind of predictions thing. Spoiler alert, I predicted wins in every single game in March, which some people thought I was an idiot for. But this time last season, we all know what happened. It's a side we've already beaten earlier on in the season. We have run at Home Park in the not too distant past. Not great the last couple of visits there. I think there'll be goals, and I think we will come out the right side. I think it'll be quite an entertaining game. I'm looking forward to it. You know, Plymouth play good football. Obviously, we know we play good football. So as a spectacle and as a first-timer to that part of the world, to Home Park, I'm very much looking forward to the game, and I think we will come out the right side of it.
We got a weather report, didn't we, off the top? I'm trying to remember who
posted. Apparently, yeah.
Could it be Swansea on repeat? I think someone's predicting it. Hooning it down was the word, wasn't it?
That'll do. That was 2-1. I'll be Bob on, and I'll be sat here next week ahead of you again in predictions.
Swansea part two, maybe. We shall see. Yeah, I just think there's a little bit of defensive frailty, and I think I assume that the team are going to fly down there.
Yeah.
But injuries to Burns, Broadhead, not helpful. Chaplin, a little bit of a doubt. I just think there's a lot of mitigating circumstances around it, and away point at Plymouth is nothing to be sniffed at as well. So I'm kind of, it's more of a reluctant prediction than a kind of a hopeful one, if that makes sense. I'd take a 2-2, but I think you're right, you know, that there shouldn't be anyone that we fear really at the moment. So
like I said, Leeds went there recently, you know, they
yeah, West Brom, etc.
If we have designs of, you know, what we want to do this season, it's the kind of place we are going to have to go and pick up 3 points.
Indeed, absolutely right. Well, David's going for a 1-1. There you go. And Mark has also gone for a 1-2. David, for those who are listening on podcast, is a Plymouth fan, though. Gary's going 2-1 Town. Eric, 3-1. He predicts he's got these are getting more negative, Eric. I hope you're okay. Or you're maybe doing some reverse psychology on us. I don't know, but 3-1 there. Rob also going for a hard fought draw. He goes 1-1 in the rain. Amari for us, Hardy for them. Reading also matching your 2-1. Nick going for a surprising 0-0. Can you see a 0-0, Seb?
Anything's not after possible, we've given the stats for how many goals they score, how many goals we concede, etc. Nick's probably right. That's what it'll be now.
There you go. We've manifested a 0-0. Matt is going for a 3-2. I'm definitely putting Matt's predictions up in future after what happened against Norwich. David's going for a 2-1. Morsi deflected shot at 101 minutes. Wow. 101 minutes. I'd be interested to know how 10 minutes of added time happens as well. If you'd have provided us that insight as well. Collins going for a 2-1 for Town, as is Irvid as well. Porksmith, Plymouth 2, Town 3. It does feel like a 2-3 type game, but I predicted that last week and it didn't help me, did it? Matt, who is local but isn't able to travel down, he's going for a 3-1 victory for Town. Seb is the man, says Eric. There you go. A lot of love. A bit of love for you. Neil going 3-1. Steve going 2-0. And Joel, a scrappy 0-1. I assume that's Ipswich. There you go. Universe doesn't care. I'm not confident. I'll go 2-0 and hope I'm wrong. Yeah, you need to win just to stand still. You're right.
It's crazy, isn't it? He's right. Yeah, we do. 72 points at the start of March. And any other season.
Yep. Matt's saying snow in Plymouth apparently as well. So maybe not a repeat of Swansea. Paul, with a better team than the last time we played them, they're not as good. 4-2, he's saying as well. It's not going to be a sunny afternoon, says Tony in Plymouth. Paul going for an Amari hat-trick as well. Chris, our friend in New Zealand, going for a 2-0 Town win. And Graham, the weather podcast. 8 degrees in Plymouth Saturday, says Graham. So probably no snow. There you go. Dr. Zach King's going for a 3-1. And Peter, we'll finish with Peter's prediction, 2-1 Town. We'll be back next week to see how Seb got 2 more points than me in the predictions. Thank you, as always, to editors as well. We always forget to thank editors, particularly Ed, drummer Ed, for letting us use their music in our intros and outros, including that prediction stinger there. If you've want any last predictions, any lineup questions, any shout outs, or want to give Seb any praise or criticism for me, now is the time to put it in the chat before we say goodbye. Seb, do you want to do bits and pieces? Because I need to sign us out, don't I? So
The season is crucial with the sign-off that the pre-match show does, as we know from experience. You've got to keep it going. Thank you to everybody for watching and getting involved. Thank you to the Plymouth fans for coming in the chat. Much appreciated. Don't forget to check us out with the with the flagship show on Sunday as well. Get yourself to the Greyhound, Ipswich's number one pub. Get yourself a NordVPN tracking thing, whatever you need it for.
NordVPN. Yep.
Yeah, get a NordVPN, that's what the cool kids do. Plug Telegram, come and see us on Telegram if you want to. As we said, the flagship will be back on Sunday. It's Ben, Dave and Joe. You'll get a mini bite-sized preview for Bristol City, which will be out, recorded by the flagship guys. That will be out probably at the start of next week on Monday. And then come and join me and Mikey doing our usual instant match reaction show next Tuesday with old man Woodward running up the hill to come and join us in.
Oh man, Woodward. Yeah, a lot of love in the chat. Thank you everyone for joining us. Numbers fantastic. As we said, we're here every Thursday 8 p.m. To preview the weekend game as well. So thank you everyone for getting involved. Chat has been great, really great to get that external insight from Plymouth fans, as Seb said as well, and from you guys as well, your predictions, your insights as well, and weather reports. That is very much now a feature of this podcast. I need to get some emojis, don't I? Seb, thank you as always for all your hard work. I look forward to seeing you and plenty of the Blue Army down in the West Country. It's not really the West Country, it's beyond the West Country. It's not France, that's the other side, mate. Plymouth is more towards America than it is to France, I suggest.
That's what I meant.
But yeah, thank you everyone for getting involved. Before you go, do give us a thumbs up and a subscribe as well. A lot of love for other teams as well. The promotion race is hotting up. I don't think we've officially called it the run-in yet, though, have we, Seb?
10 games is the run-in. 10
games. More weeks to go.
Cardiff. No, it's Cardiff.
This time next week.
That's
the run-in, folks. So do join us next Thursday when we'll talk about that. But yeah, thank you to everyone who's got involved. And as always, come on, you Blues!
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.